Arizona with her four dogs that have a total of 15 legs. You do the math. Please welcome certified speaking professional, Mika Johnson.
So before we start talking about the generations, let me ask you a question. How many of you have family? Raise your hand. And do you have any control over who your family is, yes or no?
No.
No. You just get stuck with them. And I figure that even in the best gene pools, there's going to be a weak link. Be honest. How many of you have a weak link in your family? Uh-huh. And is the weak link you? No. No. The weak link is not you, because in my family, I do not want to consider it's me. In my family, it is my cousin, Brendan. Number one reason I do not get along with Brendan. Now, I know we all love our family. We'll go out on a limb for our family. We'll do everything we can for our family. But there's no rule written or said that we have to like them. True? Number one reason Brendan and I do not get along? He's 17 years old. Right there, the two of us just clash. Brendan wears pants so big he can fit a small tribe of people right in there with him. And then he puts his baseball cap on backwards. I have to be honest, I just don't get this. We live in Phoenix, Arizona. Phoenix, Arizona, it is sunny 364 days a year. Purpose of the baseball cap is to keep the sun out of your eyes. He actually rotates it around. Keeps the sun out of his ear. And then he got a tattoo. I have no problems with tattoos. I'm too personally afraid to get a tattoo, but not Brendan. His mother signed the release form. She even took him to the tattoo parlor. At a family reunion, I saw Brendan slouched against the back wall. I walked up to Brendan. I said, Brendan, let's see the tattoo. He rolled up his sleeve. It was right here on his bicep. It read, Brendan. Brendan had tattooed his own name on his bicep. Now, Brendan comes what we call the new millennium generation, sometimes called Generation 2000, sometimes called Generation Y, sometimes referred to as the Echo Boom, and the real creative types call it the next generation. Now, I compare Brendan to my other cousin. My other cousin's name is Hannah. She comes from the same generation, but she's polar opposite, completely different. Hannah's bubbly. She's enthusiastic. She wakes up excited. If you say to Hannah, Hannah, do you want to go to the store with me? Hannah will look you in the eye, and she'll say, Megan, I, Hannah Ken, would love to go to the store with you. Let's go. If you ask Brendan the same question, Brendan, do you want to go to the store with me? Brendan won't even look up. He'll just do this. Bite me, he says. Now, I would like you to think of somebody from the new millennium generation. But I want you to think of somebody that's more like Brendan than Hannah. I want you to think of somebody that is a thorn in your side, a burr under your saddle. I want you to think of somebody that when you see a man down the hall, you have to avert your eyes because you know if you give them direct eye contact, you without a doubt trip them, throw them to the ground, straddle them, and strangle them. It may be somebody you work with, maybe somebody you live with. But if for some reason you don't work with anybody from this generation or live with anybody from this generation, think of the last time you went to a restaurant, a retail store, a Starbucks. Somebody from this generation gave you customer service. All right, like to have somebody in mind? And next, I would like you to find a partner. I know this is the part some of you hate. The partner part. Think to yourself, I don't want to find a partner. I don't want to talk to my neighbor. I don't want to be anybody's best friend. Real easy to find a partner, I'll tell you how. Look around your table. Make eye contact with somebody. Give them one of these. They're your partner. Three in a group is okay, but here's what I'd like you to do. You have a little green evaluation form from me. You can use the back as scratch paper, because we are green. Use the back as scratch paper, but I would like you and your partner to create a list of words that describe this challenging generation. Remember, we're describing somebody more like Brendan than Hannah. Create a list of words that describe this challenging generation. If you happen to fall in this generation, we're not talking about you right now. So I'll give you a few minutes to do that. Go.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, we have teenagers.
So yeah.
Words that describe
Brendan.
You can tell I'm thinking of my son's friends.
ADD, short attention span.
That's right.
just don't care. Tattoo. They have more holes in their face than they're originally born with. They're wired. They're connected. All right? What else?
Self-centered.
Sure, it's all about them. They want to talk about their MySpace page and their blogging and their Facebook. They don't talk about anything but maybe the work at hand. In fact, if you say, hey, let's talk about the work at hand, they look at you. The work will be there tomorrow. Entitled. Sure. They want to know what's in it for them. Tech savvy. Who said tech savvy? What's your name? Joe said tech savvy. The assignment was to create a list of words to describe this challenging generation. Joe comes up with tech savvy.
They disregard.
It sounds suspiciously positive to me. Oh, they're creative. Oh, it's getting worse. All right, so let's give Joe a round of applause. He's our token positive person. Yay, Joe. Now, let's go back to the fun stuff, the negative stuff.
They disregard organizational charts.
Disregard organizational chart. Doesn't matter, you know. And they want a raise right away. They'll say, hey, when am I going to get promoted? I have been here for 2 weeks. And they'll even say to you, I don't have all the time in the world. This is just a job. This isn't my career. I mean, I'm not going to be here years from now when I'm old. Like you. All right? What else?
Freak spirited or free?
Freak with a K. Freak spirited. I've never heard that one before. Freak spirited. Okay? What else? Fearless. Okay, again, we're tending towards the positive. I need some more good negative people.
Ungrateful.
Sure. Thank you. I love the negative people. Uncommitted. Yeah. They may be here. They may not be here. In fact, we'll even say to you, hey, you know what? I might be sick tomorrow. What was it? Soap Dodgers? What is that?
Oh.
What is soap? Oh, you mean they don't bathe. Oh. Soap Dodgers. 2 from a table I've never heard, and they're sitting by each other. All right, good list. Soap Dodgers. It just has this funny visual image. I talked to all different types of groups, associations from all different types of industry, and I asked them to create a list of words that describe the younger generation. And you know what? They come up with the same list of words. In fact, I have my own list. Take a look at my list. Bad attitude. Just do not have a teamwork attitude. Continually complaining. They moan. They groan. They light up the room when they leave. I have some people who don't get that one. Gossip, lazy, apathetic, rude, disloyal, wants reward, and my favorite one's the last one. They want to have fun. They expect it to be fun. In fact, I'll even say to you, this isn't any fun. My friend's 13-year-old daughter came out of ballet class the other day. She looked at her mom and she said to her mom, Mom, I just want you to know I had no fun in ballet today. As I said, I talk to all different types of groups. I get the same list of words. Now, I do have to tell you that there is a difference between your list and my list on the screen. Your list you created by the young people you work with, you live with, you interact with today. My list comes from Life Magazine, 1968. Baby boomers. In fact, how many fall into the baby boomer? Baby boomers. Baby boomers born between 1946 and 1964. Baby boomers? All right, baby boomers, okay. Let's review. Baby boomers. Your manager thought you had bad attitudes. You complained, gossip, lazy, rude, apathetic, wanted reward, and all you wanted to do was have fun. Gen Xers in 1996, Fortune magazine called us the gold collar workers because we were coming into the workplace with such unrealistic, lofty, arrogant demands like bringing our pets to work. So what's my point? My point is that what we're really describing is a youthful generation. And the definition of youthful is inexperienced and new. They have a different set of experiences than you do. When I was 6 years old, I went to the grocery store with my father. Now, do you remember when you used to go to the grocery store? When you used to go to the grocery store, there used to be a little white sticker on the item you're purchasing. Remember that little white sticker? It's called a price tag. Remember that little white sticker? I talk to younger and younger audiences that do not remember the white sticker. I hate those people. But the rest of you are white sticker people. Little white sticker, it read $1.69. But the cashier misread it. She only charged my father 69 cents. I mean, this was before scanners. The cashier had to actually enter the price into the register. And so when she only charged my father 69 cents, my father said, no, it's not 69 cents. You've undercharged me. It's $1.69. She said, you're right. She charged him the correct price, and we left. That was it. No fanfare. It was just, took the whole thing, maybe took 22 seconds. I was 6 years old. When I was 6 years old, my weekly allowance was a dollar. I mean, it took me a week to earn what my father had just now thrown away in seconds. Now I know as adults, weeks fly by. I mean, when someone tells us they want something in a week, they give us a week deadline, I mean, we're thinking, wow, week, that's not very long. But remember when you were 6 years old? Remember when you were 6 years old and somebody told you you had to wait a week for something? That was a long time. Do you remember when you were 6 years old, you never thought you'd turn 10? Remember that? And 10 was the magical number because 10 was when you turned what? Double digits, yes. You became an adult. At 10. So when my father did this, when my father threw away what to me was a considerable amount of money that took me a long time to earn, and he threw it away and could have avoided the pain, I have to tell you, I was not impressed. And I felt he needed some advice. So I turned to him and I said, Daddy, that was dumb. I said, Dad, if you just hadn't said anything, you could have saved a whole dollar. I said, wait till we get home and I tell Mom what you did. And he said, you're right. He said, I could have saved a dollar. He said, but my self-worth is worth more than a dollar. Now that event is called a foundational signpost. And the reason I tell you that story is because I want you to think of your own foundational signposts. Think of the core values and the beliefs that you hold near and dear to your heart. Those values and beliefs that guide your decisions, both small and large. You can trace them back to an event, a signpost. Something happened in your life, and you walked away from that event with a perception of the right way and the wrong way for the world to operate. And the reason I want you to think about those signposts is think about how much shaping power they have over who you are today. The fact that you're doing what you're doing for a living. The fact that you spend the time with the people you spend your time with. The fact that you're in this room today is in large part because of those foundational signposts. And the reason I want you to think about their pull, their impact, and their influence is because we have another set of signposts called generational signposts. And generational signposts have just as much power, just as much influence, but generational signposts change from generation to generation. For example, do I have anybody here that had a paper route? Anybody have a paper route when they're a kid? Okay, in the very back, in the blue shirt, your name is?
Eric.
Eric, you had a paper route?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you still have it?
No.
No, okay. Eric, how old were you when you had your paper route?
Started about nine.
Okay. Did you have a morning route, Eric, or an afternoon route?
Morning.
And what time did you get up in the morning, Eric?
Six
in the morning. I imagine the papers had to be delivered by a certain time. Yeah, you could be out there at noon delivering the morning paper, right? Did you collect the money for people on your route?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? I talked to some people, Eric, that the way it worked was they collected the money, they paid for the papers, and they got what was left over.
Yep.
Is that the case for you? Okay. How many of you have your paper delivered by a nine-year-old today? I don't see one hand. Those of you that still get a paper, because over 50 million of us get our news off the internet versus a paper, those of you that do get a paper, who delivers it? A grown-up in a car.
Drives by
and throws it out the window. Baby boomers in the group. When you were in school, when you were in grade school and your school's going to have a fundraiser, sell candy. How'd you sell that candy?
Door to door.
How do you sell your kids candy today?
Run the grocery store.
You take it to work. You take it to work where you buy it all. You say to the kid, let's just get it over with, I'll take one of everything. So what's my point? My point is that over time there has been an erosion of these responsible building generational signposts. Generational signposts shape our understandings of the workplace, they shape our work attitudes, work ethics, and they also shape our expectations of companies and influence the products we purchase. Right now there are four generations in the workforce and the marketplace. As a country, we've never had this experience before. Four. Each generation bringing a different set of generational signposts to the workplace and to the marketplace. Each generation with a different set of expectations and understandings about how the rules work. In a perfect world, there'd be this incredible collaboration of ideas, energy, enthusiasm. With all these different experiences, we should be moving forward at a neck-break speed. But what we have is conflict. And as you know, when you have conflict, things come to a grinding halt. Right now, 60% of employers report tension between the generations. 70% of older employees are dismissive of younger employee talents, and 50% of younger employees are dismissive of older employee talents. Here's why. We attach a large emotional significance to our generational signposts. They mean something. How many remember where you were the day a man walked on the moon? Anybody here remember where they were the day a man walked on the moon? Okay. We have a handful of people that remember where they were. Probably if you were to talk to them about it, they remember where they were. They remember the people that were sitting in the living room with them. They remember the day before and the day after. It was a significant event for our country. Those of you that didn't raise your hand, you probably weren't even alive the day a man walked on the moon. So here's the point. The point is you have an event, a generational signpost that people remember 40 years later, and not only do the rest of you not remember, but it has no importance. It's not that big of a deal. A man walking on the moon, who cares? In fact, a man walking on the moon is about as impressive as a man walking to Walmart. Doesn't matter. Generational signposts mean something. We have four generations in the workplace and the marketplace, all of them coming with this different set of generational signposts. And what I'd like to do is take a journey and take a look at each generation, their generational signposts, and what you can do to make each encounter a more successful one. Sound good? All right. Paper. Who's my paper boy? Tell me your name again.
Eric.
Eric, you let me pick on you, so I have a CD of today's presentation. Please give Eric a big round of applause for me. Now, I know some of you are note takers. You love to take notes. And when we are done, you'll have the most beautiful set of notes I've ever seen. There'll be Roman numerals, little numbers, indentations, footnotes. You're a freak. I hate taking notes. I really do. And because I hate taking notes and I hate wasting paper, I developed the email mini course. Email mini course means if you want, I will email you the notes. Just fill out the little green form, include your email address, and I'll send you 5 emails over 5 days, all the notes. Sound good? Yes. It starts with what we call the traditional generation, sometimes called the mature generation, sometimes called the silent generation. These are people born before 1945. Two of the largest generational signposts for this generation were World War II and the Great Depression. Now, you could say to me, but Megan, not every generational signpost applies to everybody within that generation. That's true. That would be impossible. But it is the overall attitude that shapes our country. That's what gives a generational signpost its real kick. During the Great Depression, 9 million people lost their life savings. 86,000 businesses closed their doors. More than 2,000 banks failed. And in 1932, 14 million people unemployed. That is one of every four workers. What this generation learned was that if they postponed immediate gratification, if they worked towards a greater good, a common goal that satisfied not just their needs, but the needs of everybody, then they would be rewarded. By working towards a greater good, a common goal, they were successful in World War II. They came out of the Great Depression. They staved off the spread of communism. They rebuilt Europe and Japan. They created the consumer market we know today. Products that we still use every single day. Washing machines, dryers, microwave ovens, television sets. All were designed, developed, and brought to market by this one generation. I challenge every single one of you, when you get home, walk through your home. There's not one room in your house that doesn't have at least one item of significance that came from this generation. Two entities that rewarded this generation the most were big business and government. With the help of big business and mass production, these products that at one time would have been affordable only to a few, now through mass production were affordable to many. With the help of a VA loan, more people could afford homes than ever before. This is the generation where owning your own home became a reality. That was where the American dream developed. Average cost of a first house for this generation? $7,000. How many of you spent more on a used, really used car? Yeah. First car I purchased when I was 18 years old. The car was older than I was at the time, and the car cost more than my grandmother's first house. And my grandmother's first house is still standing. Not so much for the car. But the point is because they adhere to these generational signposts, their quality of life improved. That's the key with generational signposts in the marketplace or in the workplace. When a generation adheres to those generational signposts, they are rewarded, reinforced, and their quality of life improves. And for this generation, as their quality of life continued to improve, they began to have children, which is what I think these two people are really about to do. And that's why we had the baby boom, people born between 1946 and 1964. Again, we're the baby boom, we're the baby boom people. Raise your hands again, baby boom, all right? It is the largest generation. 77 million people were born during this time period. Our country had never experienced such a boom in the birth rate. We've never experienced one since. Do you realize that as baby boomers reach senior citizenship, the number of senior citizens in our country is going to double? I mean, that's like taking everyone that lives in California and the New England states, that's how many senior citizens we're going to have. And they're still going to be driving. Really slow. Baby boomers, we built hospitals to accommodate the births of baby boomers. We built schools to educate the baby boomers. Totally different than the traditional generation. My grandfather, he's from the traditional generation. When he was in eighth grade, his family took him out of school. Why'd they take him out of school? Put him to work. One generation later, our entire attitude about education changed. Baby boomers were expected to go to school, complete high school, and it was not unusual nor the family sacrifice it had once been to pursue higher degrees of education. Baby boomers were the first generation to ever be graded on a report card, works well, and plays well with others. Some of you may not have that written on your report card. But the point is that getting along with others was vital. And the reason it was vital is because even though we were building schools to accommodate baby boomers, sometimes we couldn't build them fast enough. I've talked to some baby boomers who had 30, 40, even 50 kids in their class. You shared your desk. You shared your pencils, your supplies. It was essential you get along. So you were graded on it, just like reading, writing, arithmetic. And that importance, that generational signpost of getting along with others, getting along with your classmates in the workplace has translated into teammates. Baby boomers are a teamwork generation. Think about the 80s, as baby boomers began to take management positions. That's when we really started talking about teams. That's when teamwork became the buzzword. So we had team meetings, team leaders, quality circles, group hugs, kumbaya. That's baby boomer stuff. In 1965, Time magazine named Baby Boomers the Man of the Year. They said baby boomers are going to clean up our cities, end racial discrimination, and find a cure for the common cold. They remain the largest force in the workforce in the marketplace today. Now, there is a lot of brouhaha going on that baby boomers are going to leave the workforce in huge numbers. It makes it sound like we're going to wake up one day and they're all gone. Where'd they go? See, I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, for one thing, baby boomers have more credit card debt than anybody. Baby boomers never think that's funny. But the second most important piece is that baby boomers, more than any other generation, what they do is a big part of their identity. It's a big part of who they are. And I think that's because, for the most part, baby boomers had traditional parents that drove home the message, you, baby boomers, have opportunities I never had. And they took those opportunities and ran with them. So I don't think baby boomers are going to give up what they do so easily, but they may begin to make lifestyle choices when it comes to their job, which ironically is what they've encouraged their children to do from the get-go, which we'll talk about a little bit later. Now, as baby boomers grew up, it was a peaceful time. In general, the economy was strong. The whole attitude was that if you conformed, you would profit. But as we moved into the late 60s and the early 70s, baby boomers began to challenge and question the rules and the status quo that had been set by the traditional generation. And during the late 60s and the early 70s, a lot of baby boomers had pharmaceutical assistants. Some of you more than others. That's actually a picture of my two favorite baby boomers. That's my mom and dad. That's my dad sitting in the center, and that's my mom off to the side of that blue and red thing. What do you call those things?
Poncho.
Poncho, yes. Thank you. She actually made that one herself with a couple pair of sticks. Does anybody have a poncho? An original poncho? Anybody? Your mother does. Oh, she gets a CD for that. There you go. Give her a round of applause. You know, I think no to the poncho maker. I don't think all those holes keep out the wind and rain. But baby boomers were successful by challenging the rules. In Phoenix, Arizona, the city I've lived in my entire life, there is a building in downtown Phoenix that at one time was the all-black high school. But Brown versus Board of Education, that changed. In the 50s, if you were a woman, you decided to look for a job and you opened up Help Wanted ads. Help Wanted ads are actually separated by gender. There are Help Wanted ads for women and there are Help Wanted ads for men. And in my paper carrier example, often I'll call on a woman who had a paper route, and every time I do that, they explain that the paper route really wasn't their paper route, because women were not allowed to have paper routes, it was their brother's paper route, and they'd have to get the paper route in their brother's name. But baby boomers challenged that, and as the job market began to open up for women, the birth rate began to fall. And this is where we have Generation X, people born between 1965 and 1980. How many fall in this generation, Generation X? Yeah, you're the smallest. You're barely there. You're a bleep on the screen. Generation X, our smallest generation. Here's a picture of my two favorite baby boomers, my mom and dad, with their favorite Gen Xer, me, with a different hairstyle. So Generation X is the smallest generation. Now, normally during this time period, I'll look out in the group. There's always a few people. This is what they're doing. First thing they do is they cross their arms. And then I've got a little decoder card for you in the back. And if they've got their decoder card, they've got it sitting there right in front of them. And this is what they do. They look at their decoder card. And then they look at the screen. And then they look at me. And then they look at their decoder card. And they look at the screen. And then they look at me. And then they look at their decoder card. And look at the screen, look at me, and know what they're thinking. What they're thinking is, he's speaking. Who decides when a generation begins and when a generation ends? Seems like you could make this stuff up. And I do. But not this part. What we do is we look at the rise and fall of the birth rate. Prior to 1945, the birth rate was a slow but steady decline. Two events happened. Soldiers came home from World War II, combined with advances in medicine. It was those two events that really catapulted the birth rate. Prior to 1945, the birth rate was a slow, steady decline because the infancy rate, highest mortality rate, was during the infancy stage. But now, advances in medicine, children are surviving the infancy stage on into adulthood. The birth rate continues to climb until 1965, when the job market began to open up for women, the pill became available, and the birth rate began to fall. It hit an all-time low in 75, stayed stagnant from 75 to 80, and then after 1980 began to climb again. But even knowing that, we always have a few people right in there between two generations. You're kind of right there on the cusp. Don't anybody like that? You're on the cusp? Got a couple cuspers, okay. Cuspers always want to know. This is what cuspers always want to know. They always want to know, what about me? And I am here to tell you, cuspers, there's nothing we can do for you. You were born during a bad year. I was born in 1970. That puts me right there in the middle of Generation X. 90% of Generational X signposts apply to me. There's a few that don't. But what I want you to listen for, not just which signposts apply to you. I don't care if you're a cusper or if you're in the middle of a generation like I am. But think about how those generational signposts have really shaped your expectations, and especially when it comes to others. Especially when you find yourself walking away from an exchange with someone from a different generation, just shaking your head or scratching your chin, thinking, "What? I don't understand what this person. Why are they behaving this way? Or why is it they're asking for what they're asking? Or why is it they seem to be frustrated with me?" Because I think sometimes we unintentionally step on people's generational toes. Because our generational signposts mean so much to us, and when other people don't use the same care with those generational signposts, we get our nose a little bit out of shape. So I think sometimes we unintentionally step on people's generational toes and let our toes get stepped on. So Generation X comes on board, it's an entirely different time period in our country. For one thing, we're moving into the 70s. Now the 70s are known as a decade of disillusionment. As we move into the 70s, we're in the middle of the Vietnam War. Now compare the Vietnam War with World War II. World War II brought a generation together. The Vietnam War tore our country apart. During the 70s, we had stagflation, where the cost of living continued to increase, but the amount of money people made remained stagnant. People stood in line for jobs, and people stood in line to buy gasoline. Average cost of a first home for the traditional generation was $7,000. Now a baby boomer looking to buy their first home, they're looking at an interest rate on a home purchase of 22 to 23%. The very first American president resigned during the 70s and the American hostages were taken. And as we moved into the 80s, there was another attitude shift. Remember, generational signposts are a lot about attitude. As we moved into the 80s, the attitude was if there was going to be a winner and there would be a loser, the way we could demonstrate we were winning was through consumption. We consumed to win. 80s is known as the decade of consumption. We consumed so much we even printed up little bumper stickers and put them on the back of our cars. Little bumper stickers that said things like, shop tell you what, drop. And he who dies with the most toys wins. I recently saw that bumper sticker. It said, he who dies with the most toys still dies. During the 80s, for the very first time, we had QVC pumped into our homes. NutraSweet promised us victory over sugar. And Jane Fonda created the number one workout video, which remains the number one workout video today. And BMW replaced the VW as the car with cachet. And Generation X became the first generation to ever have, in large numbers, both parents working. Oh, I know baby boomers. There's always some baby boomers that say, hey, both of my parents worked. I'm normal. True. My mother, she's an example. Both of her parents worked. My grandmother was a teacher and my grandfather was a salesman. But when my mother came home, her mother was not there. Her father was not there. But when my mother came home from school, her grandmother, my great-grandmother lived on the same street. How weird is that? But now families are moving away from their extended families and career pursuits. So when Generation X comes home, mom's not there, dad's not there. Grandma and grandpa live in a different city, entirely different state. Nobody's there. What do we call them? Latchkey. I do not think being a latchkey kid was a bad deal. Because as a latchkey kid, this is how it worked. You come home from school, you let yourself in. You could let yourself in because you had your own key. You had your own key and you had it where? Tied around your neck, a little piece of string. You let yourself in the door, and they're sitting on the kitchen counter with a list of tasks that had been left by management. Here are the rules. The task must be done on time, that means before management returns at 6 p.m., and the tasks must be done to a level of quality that was determined during the initial phase of training. So, if mom and dad, meaning management, are due home at 6 o'clock, when do I start doing the tasks? About 5:45, yeah! But the point is, it's up to me. I can decide what order. I can decide which tasks to do first. I can decide when to take a break. I can decide how many breaks to take. And what happens when something goes wrong? Where's management? Nowhere. So it's up to me to solve the problem. Because the sooner I solve the problem, complete this task, the sooner I can move on. So Generation X has become our most independent generation. They're an independent worker, and they're an independent learner. And they come into the workforce, and their attitude is, hey, tell me what you want done, give me the tools and training to do it, and then just leave me alone. Now remember, baby boomers are a teamwork generation. Baby boomers want to have a meeting, talk about the next meeting. See, you got a Gen Xers working away. Gen Xers decide, you know what, I need a break. I am ready for a break. Doesn't mean that it's the official break time. Gen Xers don't care about the official break time. They've decided it's a good time for a break. And you know what a break is to a Gen Xer? A break is me time. That's what a break is to a Gen Xer. It is all about me. And so when a Gen Xer is taking a break, they want a little me time. And you know what me time is to a Gen Xer? This is what me time looks like to a Gen Xer. Just like this. You ever see a Gen Xer doing that? Glassy eyes, slack jaw, maybe a little drool coming out of their mouth? That's me time to the Gen Xer. Now here comes the baby boomer. The baby boomer is the team leader. Baby boomer sees that Gen Xer sitting there. That baby boomer knows they gave that Gen Xer a signing bonus. That Gen Xer is making more money in their first year than this baby boomer made in their first 10. And they see that big Gen Xer just sitting there, slack jaw, glassy eyes, dazed, confused. And there's an alarm bell that goes off in the baby boomer's brain. It goes like this, beep, beep, not working, beep, beep, not working. And so the baby boomer approaches the Gen Xer. Now the baby boomer feels completely within the rights to approach the Gen Xer. And this is what they say to the Gen Xer. They go, hey, what are you doing? Now you have disturbed the Gen Xer. You have taken them out of their me time. And by asking that simple question, hey, what are you doing? You've done several different things. First thing is, by asking them what they're doing, you're implying they do not know how to manage their time. B, you're insinuating that they do not have a firm grasp of their responsibilities. And C, you're micromanaging them. So now they're annoyed, and they look at you. It doesn't matter who
they think to themselves, that Gen Xer is not a team player. Gen Xers, this is before the internet. What'd you do to entertain yourself when you got home from school? TV. TV became a signpost for Generation X. Oh, yes, baby boomers, I know you got TV. Baby boomers, I remember the very first color TV in your neighborhood. Anybody remember that? And if you didn't have a color TV, what kind of TV did you have, baby boomers? Black and white. I'll tell you right now that as Gen X children, we think you made that whole thing up to scare us. Eat your broccoli or we're getting a black and white TV. It was like an urban myth. None of us had seen one. All those little Gen X children, we'd look at each other. Black and white? How do you think they get the color out? Baby boomers, how many TVs did you have growing up? One. It sat there right there in the living room, didn't it? Big monstrous thing. You all watched it as a family. But what happened when you needed to change the channel?
You had to get up.
No channel.
You had to get up. But the knob, the channel knob, had fallen off months ago. So it was just a pair of pliers. And whoever was lucky enough to still be sitting on the couch, they'd say to you, hey, since you're up there, adjust the coat hanger. And you only watched TV till 9 p.m. You only watched your, what, three channels until 9 p.m. Because at 9 p.m., what happened? Programming went off. Not that there was nothing interesting on. There was nothing on. Went off. Test patterns. One generation later, we had cable TV. TV went from an information source to a purely entertainment source. 24/7, I could watch TV anything I wanted. And if I came home and didn't like what you're watching on TV, there was probably another TV in the house. High probability there's a TV in my bedroom. Further reinforcing the generational signpost of independence with Gen Xers. Further reinforcing the signpost that what they should do should be entertaining. Because in 1971, a show came on PBS called Sesame Street. And Sesame Street did something phenomenal. It took learning and it made learning what? Fun. I mean, you learned to count from who? The Count! You learned etiquette skills from Oscar the Grouch and table manners from Cookie Monster. So some of you are saying, well, so what? What does that really matter? Here's what happened. Gen Xers watched both of their parents work extremely hard, sometimes at the expense of the family. 50% of Gen Xers come from divorce, only to have October of 87, Black Monday, until recently, the second largest stock market crash in our country. And after that stock market crash, we entered the recession in the late 80s and the early 90s. And during that recession, companies began to flatten their structure. They began to eliminate middle management. During the late 80s, early 90s, baby boomers made up the bulk of middle management. So here's Gen Xers, 5-6 years away from entering the workforce themselves. And they watched their parents sacrifice hours of their personal life, their family, their interests. They sacrificed into their career, only to be, in the end, let go. So when Gen Xers entered the workforce 5-6 years later, the pendulum had swung. Traditional generation, loyal to the company. Because you will stay employed with that employer for the bulk of your career. My grandfather worked for Procter & Gamble his entire career. He died 10 years ago. My grandmother still will only buy Procter & Gamble products. She says she feels guilty if she doesn't use Crest toothpaste. Baby boomers are loyal to the team. Because when the team is successful, that's a positive reflection on baby boomers. But Gen Xers is loyalty to themselves. Because we can talk about being a team. You can even call it a family. But wait till we get rearranged, reorganized, or maybe purchased by a bigger fish. I might find myself out there having to look for a job. Not because I want to, because I really, truly have to. So people ask me, they say, how do I maintain a strong Gen X workforce? My answer is, don't give them a job. I've had people incredibly excited about the prospect of never hiring another Gen Xer. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is the job is not important. Now, I am not saying Gen Xers don't care about their performance. But in a survey commissioned by Deloitte & Touche, they found the number one reason Gen Xers leave their job is because the job does not tie in with their goals. Pay was fit, so long as pay is competitive. But is what experience am I having here is going to be different than down the street? What we're going to do here that's a little bit more unusual, because my responsibility to myself is that the time I spend here is well spent so that my skill set is stronger, my tool belt is bigger, that I am a better asset when I have to look for another job. Because that is going to the Gen Xers, it's inevitable. It'll happen. I'll have to at some point look for another job. So I better make sure that the experience I have here leaves me better prepared when that time comes. If you interact with Gen Xers, practice what I call the wallpaper on the wall exercise. Sometimes we come to work day in, day out. We focus on our task list. We forget about the color of the wallpaper. We forget about what brought you here in the first place.
the more you can focus on that experience, what do you provide that's a little bit different? The more the Gen X is going to focus on you and the job. That's teamwork through Gen X. Now, baby boomers, as you have aged, you have become nostalgic. Look at advertising. I actually like advertising, especially TV ads. I like TV ads because they sort of reflect our boundaries. Advertising slogan that was extremely popular with the traditional generation was Timex. Takes a licking and keeps on ticking. This resonated with the traditional generation. Their idea of themselves as being tenacious, hardworking, could persevere. I mean, remember the ads? An elephant stepped on the watch. And it kept working. Baby boomers. In the 70s, baby boomers created the very first multicultural TV ad. You remember, they put hundreds of young people on a hilltop in Italy. I want to teach the world to sing. I want to buy the world a Coke. What do you see advertised towards the aging baby boomer on TV we did not see advertised 5 years ago? Tell me. I was just looking for pharmaceuticals in general. Yes. Do you know in England it's illegal to advertise pharmaceuticals? But not in America. In America, we want you to go to the doctor and ask for drugs. Sure. Cadillac. Do you remember before Cadillac created the Escalade, do you remember the automobiles they used to create in their target market? I think maybe about 10 years ago before they created the Escalade, all the upper management, they must have looked at each other and said, wow, our target market is dying. Yeah. As in not coming back. So we better create an automobile that younger people want to buy. They created the Escalade. But when they launched it, the ads they played, Led Zeppelin. Microsoft used the Rolling Stones. Nike, GTE have used the Beatles. I had an audience member, she was so excited. 300 people in the room. She shoots up out of her chair and screams out, vegan! I saw Frankie Avalon on TV selling insurance. She was crestfallen when a much younger audience member yells back, who is Frankie Avalon? But part of that nostalgia for baby boomers is baby boomers began to have the children that they had postponed. And after 1980, the birth rate started to climb again. This is my cousin Brendan and my cousin Hannah we started talking about. This is the new millennium generation, also called Generation Y. Do we have anybody that falls into this generation, the new millennium generation? Anybody? Oh, we got a couple, all right. A little pond. But what's interesting is we have two generations side by side, Generation X and the new millennium generation, and they have the same set of parents. Baby boomers. Baby boomers are parents to this new millennium generation, which is also called an echo boom. Did I explain that already, how many people are in this generation? No. There's 72 million people in this generation. Not as large as baby boomers, 77 million, but quite a bit larger than Gen Xers. But less than 10% of this generation have a non-baby boomer parent. The majority of them have baby boomers as parents. And the baby boomer that is a parent to the new millennium generation is a different type of parent than they were to Gen Xer. I'm not saying they're better or they're worse, they're just different. They're older, their priorities have changed. They're making more lifestyle choices. I mean, do we use the word latchkey kid to describe this generation, yes or no? No. We use words like stay-at-home dad, soccer mom, play dates. This generation has had somebody in their corner. In fact, recently, they did a Gallup poll. 90% of the new millennium generation report being very close to their parents. Now compare that to 1974, 40% baby boomers said they'd be better off without their parents. This generation, again, when they surveyed this generation, 86% said they trust their parents, 86% said they trust teachers, and 83% said they trust police. Now, I don't have any numbers, but I don't think the police would have been an 83% for the baby boomers during the late 60s and the early 70s. Compared with music celebrities, 35%, and only 30% of them trust athletes. This generation is used to having somebody in their corner, somebody interested in their success. I hate people say, you know, this generation expects to have their hand held. I disagree, but they do expect to have somebody there invested in them just like they did back at home. So what does this mean? This means when you're targeting this generation, things like testimonials from experts don't matter to this generation. Things like 4 out of 5 dentists This generation doesn't care. They want to know what the fifth dentist said. There is a zero generation gap with his parents. So previous generations, marketers could exploit the generation gap, how to separate yourself away from your parents. This generation isn't looking for that at all. There's zero generation gap. I think one reason is because baby boomers put such a high priority on being young, and being close to their parents, close to their children, makes them feel young. I think that's terrific. But just like in the late 80s, early 90s, when companies flatten their structure, what we have now are home life flattening. It's more of a buddy relationship versus the traditional parental relationship. So they're not looking for a generation gap. They also are looking for input from their parents when they make decisions about big ticket items, make decisions about jobs. I've talked to college recruiters who've gone down to college campuses, they interview that college graduate, call the college graduate up, offer them a job, and that college graduate says, you know what, I need to get back to you, I got to talk to my parents. That's normal behavior for them. We take it as, you know, they can't make up their own mind. No, it's more of that they're used to having some good advice, a sounding board. Also, this generation has worked hard at being successful. They've been in clubs, organizations, they've been taking dance lessons, they've been on a schedule for achievement since they were born. So the whole target of being a slacker, kind of that which resonated with Gen Xers during the 90s, the whole grunge slacker approach, this doesn't work with this generation, because this generation doesn't perceive success as an accident. It's something that you really work at. Whereas Gen Xers were the army of one, the army of one, this doesn't work with this generation. They come from leave no one behind. Me equals we. It is a community with this generation. The whole idea that they have so many circles of friends, they're always in contact with people, it's a community. They're a diverse generation. 1 out of 3 is a minority. They're also the fastest growing segment of the workforce. They've grown from 14% to 21% in the past 4 years. Something else we see advertised on TV? Finances. Do you know how much you have for retirement? Do you know what you need for retirement? I mean, Dennis Hopper is selling retirement services. This doesn't fall on deaf ears with this generation. This is a financially savvy generation. 37% expect to save for retirement before they're 25. 46% are already contributing to retirement accounts. And 49% say retirement benefits are a very important factor when making a job choice. And a ripple effect that we've seen with this comfort level of finances and this awareness of the stock market and the economy is that this generation is very comfortable talking about how much they make. Not just with their family and friends, but with the people they work with. So they will talk to the person who's doing the same job that they're doing, and they will know exactly how much that person is making. Previous generations, Generation X included, kept that card a little closer to the chest. It was a taboo subject for the traditional generation and baby boomers. But this generation talks about it. So be prepared. If you work with this generation, they'll come and ask you, why is that person who's doing the same job as I'm doing is making more? They know about it. They represent 26% of our population. They spend over $200 billion a year of their own money. They spend an average of $30 per mall visit when they go to the mall. And then they influence another $300 to $400 billion in spending. How? Through their parents. At home, they influence 81% of the family apparel purchases and 52% of the car choices. Here's my own generational myopia. I used to think a cruise, you know, the big cruise, those big boats you float around the ocean in? I used to think that's what you did right before you died. Doctor says you got 6 months to live. You say, all right, I'll go take my cruise. Only old people took cruises, but not anymore. They figured out that this generation is part of the decision-making process. So what does that mean? That means when they come to work, they expect to be part of the decision-making process. They expect more of that kind of we are equal. And we still are somewhat set up in the old-fashioned way of motivating. Old-fashioned way of motivating being, do what I tell you to do or I'll fire you. This generation just looks in the eye and says, go ahead and fire me. I wanted to go to a party tonight anyway. Because less than 50% of this generation is financially independent living on their own. The majority of them are either A, living at home because baby boomers for some reason have said, come back and live with us. Or they have some sort of financial assistance from home. And combine that with that they don't have a lot of the bills that we get later in life. So they don't have to have that job. So some of you say, well, they're not even interested in the job. I'll agree they're not. That many of us found our entry-level jobs that interesting. That's why we're not in it anymore. But they are interested if you're interested in them. Are you excited that they've come on board? Are you showing some interest that they're there? Are you listening to what they have to say? I had a baby boomer say that she hired a new millennium person straight out of law school. She said once the orientation process was over, that new millennium person approached her. She said, here, I've listed out everything that's wrong with your orientation process. Oh, the baby boomer got upset. She got her nose bent out of joint.
She said to that new millennial person, she said, why don't you wait till you have your job under your belt, that you have a good understanding of your job, and then we'll talk about the orientation process. Basically shot her down. And there's no surprise that that person didn't last very long when she left. She didn't feel listened to. USA Today had a great article about 6 months ago. They interviewed college professors. College professors were dumbfounded because their students were turning in papers filled with instant message language. But when they interviewed the students were just as dumbfounded because they weren't even aware they were using the instant message language. Dawned on me that even the way we write to each other has changed. For example, if the traditional generation were going to write a letter to Tom Smith, how would the traditional generation start that letter to Tom Smith?
Dear Mr. Smith.
Dear Mr. Smith. If the baby boomer was going to write a letter to Tom Smith, how would they start that letter? Dear Tom. Dear Tom. If the Gen Xer was going to write a letter to Tom Smith.
Hey.
Tom. If the new millennium generation was going to write a letter.
Hey.
They're not going to write a letter. But they may send a text that says, hey. What's my point? Then we take it personally when they don't write a letter. We actually get mad when they don't use punctuation. We think it is a reflection of their job skills when they don't capitalize. We call them sloppy. If you want them to have a more formal writing style, you better let them know. Because informal writing style and making things as quick and as abbreviated as possible dominates with this generation. So if you want them to write in a more formal writing style, you need to let them know. I was in the car with my father. A song came on the radio called Love the One You're With. You heard this song? Oh, I love it. It's by Stephen Stills. And when it came on the radio, I said to my dad, I said, turn it up. I love this song. He said, really? He said, what do you like about it? I said to my dad, I said, I like the message it sends. He said, well, what do you think the message is? I said, well, the line in the song, if you can't be with the one you love, love the one you're with. I said, what that clearly means is if the one you love dumps you, which could happen, you have to love the one you're with. And the one you're with is yourself. I told my dad, it is a song about self-empowerment. He said, that's not what the song means. And after he told me what the song meant, I said, that's disgusting. Because it doesn't matter how old you are, there's certain things you never want to hear your parents say. I said, here's the difference, Dad. When you grew up, you had that cornball slogan, free love, spare me. I grew up in the 80s. There was no such thing as a free lunch, much less free love. And if you're going to free love anybody, free loving yourself was the safest health bet around. But this generation, they don't even need to meet you face to face because they feel very comfortable communicating with what? Technology. You can be standing right next to them, they're going to text you. 97% own a computer, 94% own a cell phone, 76% use instant messaging, 34% use websites as a primary source of news. Because why would you wait for the newspaper? That's tomorrow. 28% author a blog, 44% read blogs, 75% have a Facebook account, 60% own some type of portable music like an iPod. They spend an average of 6 hours a day using this stuff. 6 hours a day. Out in the world, for most baby boomers first learned to use computers at work. 10 years ago, most baby boomers could have come home from work, their spouse or the significant other would have said, honey, how was your day? They would have looked at their spouse or significant other and said, we used a computer. They're talking about getting everybody one. Don't believe it, though. Gen Xers will need to use computers at school, but this generation's using a computer before they even go to school. So what does that mean? Technology is about as impressive or as intimidating as a toaster is to us. There's no mystery there. It's their native language. But for the rest of the world, when technology confuses them, who do we call? Yeah. Multi-pierced, heavily tattooed, hat on backwards. Guys like this. Who say they're not going to fix your computer. We will bring a brand new computer home. We'll call our kids over and say, okay, how do you install the parental controls? They've got the answers. And then we expect them to follow our instructions. They have come from a place where they've been an expert. They've been listened to. But they expect that they have something and something expects to be that they expect when they come to the workplace that same kind of respect from others. To them, the authority structure has flattened. And we sometimes take it a little personally because they don't respect these levels of authority and management. To them, it's a much flatter environment. Companies go to great lengths to get this generation interested. Abbott Labs, they reach out to college students by getting the word out about flexible benefits. Aflac Insurance highlights extra time off as a perk. Xerox, old-fashioned Xerox, created a dire campaign called Express Yourself. We spend thousands and thousands of dollars to get this generation on board, and then for the first 90 days, we put them on what? Probation. Probation is the most negative word I think we can think of. I watch CSI. I know who's on probation. People that are on probation are people who've broken the law and we don't quite fully trust. So what are we saying? Welcome on board. Now you're on probation. Why? What did I do? You came to work here is what you did. You got to be excited this person's on board. This is the biggest decision they've made. They haven't made a lot of big decisions in life. This is the big one. You got to be excited. Call this first 90 days anything you want. Call it success gestation if you want to. Anything. And then after 90 days, we give them a review. And then when do they get their next review? A year later, we've gone from lifetime employment with the traditional generation to now 2 years is considered long term. 2 years is long term. They've had the internet at their fingertips. Their parents are cell phone call away. They instant message their friends. And we say, we're excited you're here, but now we're going to make you wait a year to get information regarding the most important decision ever. That's a total disconnect. You got to give them information right away. Feedback about their performance. Feedback about your expectations. Be clear about what you want. I'll tell you one area that people get real fired up about is dress code. Ooh, dress code. They say to me, I didn't even know you could pierce that. I'll say, what's your dress code? Business casual. You know what business casual is. Business casual, you is Dockers and golf shirt. Business casual, this generation is bar and duct tape. Be specific. Show pictures. If dress code's an issue. But on the other hand, we need to let go of some rules. Some rules just do not serve us well anymore. Some rules were put into place 10, 15 years ago that worked then but don't work now. But we are still stuck to them, emotionally stuck to them, because we were part of the original committee that put those rules there. So we're stuck with those rules. Nah, you got to ask yourself, if you got rules that you got the younger generation butting their heads against, banging their heads against, and you're spending a lot of time and energy trying to reinforce those rules, ask yourself the three layers of why. Three layers of why is this rule important? And if you can peel back three layers of why, and none of the answers have to do with customer service, quality, or cost, I suggest that is a rule you get rid of. Get rid of the rule. I'll tell you, a great company that's gotten rid of a lot of rules is Google. Because what Google focuses on is creating the sense of community this generation is looking for. Generation X gravitates towards working on their own. Baby boomers, teamwork. But this generation really is looking for a sense of community. Here's some of the things that Google offers. Flexible hours, casual dress for everyone, bring your dogs to work. On-site doctor and dental care, free massage and yoga, stock options, free drinks, snacks, espressos, free meals, free recreation everywhere. Valet parking. On-site car wash detailing, maternity and paternity leave. And when you take maternity and paternity leave, you get a $500 gift card for a restaurant that delivers. Near-site child care, on-site dry cleaning, unlimited sick days after a year. Because Google says, who cares? Three layers of why. If they're doing what we need them to do, why not give them unlimited sick days? 401k investment groups, employer referral bonus programs. Zappos.com, the online shoe retailer, they have periodic parades that will just break out. Periodically, people just take parades through the office. You know, they have a napping room at Zappos.com. Wait, why not? PetSmart, bring your dogs to work on Fridays. Because they said, why not? Three layers of why. Why can't we get rid of some of these rules if it creates the environment and community that this generation wants to live in? Give this generation feedback. In a recent study with this generation, they said they'd like to hear from their manager at least once a week. A sit-down conversation about what I'm doing better than I was doing a month ago and what can I plan to learn in the next month. Once a week. I'll agree. They don't care about the job, but they care about the community you're creating. That's what they're going to bond with. That sense of community in you. You are the person they're going to bond with. Just like back at home, they bonded with those two parents that invested in their success. And then finally, have some fun with this generation. I know. I actually had heard someone say, if work was supposed to be fun, we'd call it fun, not work. According to the Wall Street Journal, we spend 90% of our waking hours at work and some of our sleeping hours. We should have a little fun. I spoke for a group in their break room. They had this big board made of cork. What do you call those boards that are made of cork and you push thumbtacks into? What do you call those? Cork boards. All right, I'll call it that. Big cork board. It was 5 foot by 5 foot. It was covered with pictures of this one particular employee, but it wasn't him at work. It was obviously photos he brought from home, his own personal photos of his family and his friends and his hobbies and his interests. And I asked about it, and what the manager explained was that once a month they assign that board to somebody different, and that person can put whatever they want on the board as long as it's A, not offensive, he says we call it family friendly, he said, or and B, it's a reflection of who they are, their personality. He said, and what it does is gives them a little insight about who that person is. So that even if you don't work with that person, the next time you see him walking down the hall, you meet him at a meeting, you say, yeah, you're the guy that likes to go rollerblading or snowboarding, or you're the person that has 22 cats. It gives us a little insight, builds that community. And when I came to speak to them, they said, Megan, do you want to put anything on the board while you're here? Now, you heard in my introduction, I have four dogs that have a total of 15 legs. Those are the good at math and figured out. I have a three-legged dog. When you have a three-legged dog and you take your three-legged dog into public, you get one of two reactions. First reaction you get is the excited person. There are people actually out there that are excited. My dog only has three legs. I don't understand this. I don't know why they're excited, but they are. Here's what they do. Your dog only has three legs. Bless your heart. On the opposite end of the spectrum is the angry person. There are people actually out there angry. My dog only has three legs. I don't understand this either, but they are. They're angry. And the angry person gets right up in your face, and the angry person says, hey, what happened to your dog? I used to be intimidated by the angry person until one day I said to the angry person, that is a good question, because she started out with four legs. But I found out she was a digger. And I had to teach her a lesson. Angry person doesn't talk to me anymore. Here's the picture I put on the board. Aww. I showed that picture to the Association of Funeral Directors, people that work at funeral homes. They said, that dog needs work. All of us have invested either in the company, or we've invested in a cause or a belief. We have taken and sacrificed our finances, our energy, our time, our enthusiasm to something we believe in. All of that is going to be for nothing unless we invest in the new millennium generation. And when I say invest, I mean not just learn about them, but allow them to learn about you, what your beliefs are, not just what they are, but why you have those beliefs, and your causes and your feelings. Because until we really take this opportunity that's been presented to us to really share who we are with all the generations, everything we've done to make this place a better place isn't going to mean anything. You've got to pass it on to this new millennium generation. And that's how we take four generations and work together as one. Thank you very much.